members. And we'll continue the meeting with Senator Carson, Chairman of the Committee.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, looks like, do you want to pass them out?
I'd like to pass out 2625.
Well, let me.
We've had a hearing on it.
No, we've had a hearing.
We've had a hearing on 2625.
Well, it's on hearing today, though. Let's introduce you. There's some other people that want to hear, so let's hold that. Let's go to 3090, which is the first one, and Tony. Wait a minute, here, are we going to have a hearing?
Is it passed out already, or?
3090 is in front of you, it's not in the book.
People signed up for 2037, are we going to have a hearing on that?
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Tony.
I think there's a future that's planned, 2017 as well.
Looks like 3090 and 2037, I think I'm going to go to the legislature first. I think, well, 3090 was set up, but we have three members of the House of Representatives here on 2037, and they're in session, so I think in deference to our colleagues from the West, among the three, Martin, or Dr. Cherry, or Mary, who wants to come in first? We'll prepare the hearing open on 2037. Who wants to, Doc, you want to come on 2037, Martin?
Well, I'm on 3090.
You're on 3090, oh, okay. Okay, well, let's, Dr. Cherry, or Representative Reed.
I'm in a bit of embarrassing situation. I have two sets of amendments here, and I've not looked, they were prepared by council, and I'm not sure how they work, but I can tell you the two problems that they're designed to correct. One is a very simple one, and the way to, are you familiar with this bill?
2037?
This bill, maybe Mary Ricky ought to, she's carried it in the committee, and I'm not in that committee.
Well, Mary, why don't you come up and join Dr. Cherry here?
Sometimes it's a.
2037.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I thought I heard you call 3090.
Well, I did, but we'll take you two so you can get back and pass all those good laws or not.
Pass out some of the Senate bills.
I assume you vote no on a lot of those, but go on, please. 2037,
Mr. Chairman, and those of you who've been in the legislature previously, I think don't have to be told, is the work of at least two sessions, and this is the third, in which we've made a gradual progression toward this result, and we come within very close distance of creating a uniform election day for local government, special districts, and school districts. This would, it does these things, we accomplish these things this time. One is to establish the first Monday in May as local government election day, that is for special districts and school districts.
First Monday or first Tuesday?
First Monday. We were trying, no.
First Tuesday.
First Tuesday, excuse me, thank you, Vern, I beg your pardon. First Tuesday in May as local government day. The original bill, we combined several bills here, and your administrative assistants prepared an excellent memorandum, so I think we need not take time here that you do not wish to, but the combination of bills originally came in with an interim committee bill from the Education Committee, which created uniform election days for school districts, and then, and that was a first Monday date, and the the bill which created a local election day, single election day for special districts, was on the same day as the primary. This is not really a compromise, but we came up with the recognition that we couldn't put all those local elections on the primary date at this time. And so we're taking one step and placing this on the first Tuesday in May, so that all county clerks can cope with the second change that's required in this act, and this is that county clerks would administer the elections for these districts. At this time, then, we have brought through this bill all districts except the landowner, two landowner districts, the soil and water districts, the irrigation and water districts that are landowner districts are not under this. They will retain their election date in November. Their election, their electorate are of a different composition than these anyway.
Senator Major?
This is an observation. The bill has passed both bodies, which includes not only landowners and soil and water conservation districts, but all the interventions voted.
Yes, but the they asked to be retained on the November date.
General election.
Because they have to, yeah. All right, and the, now, let's see, what. Oh, the next point here I want to make was that it does move, there was one discrepancy we couldn't seem to overcome in the last session, and this was the constitutional question of 6 months registration for persons voting in school district elections and 30 days for everybody else.
Yeah.
There has now been a Supreme Court decision on this, and I'm not prepared to speak on that, but it's available to you, and the Secretary of State's office could take this up for you, which says that 30 days is ample amount of time for school districts or any other district. And so this bill, relying on that Supreme Court decision, makes the registration date uniform for all. For all elections, the so that in this act, then voter qualification, nominations, election administration procedures for all special and school districts are incorporated in this bill under Chapter 259, and the exempt districts under your main points of your summary, your administrative assistant has provided for you. Now there are amendments to this bill. We brought three, four bills actually together to put this bill together. I had hoped that we would be able to send over to local government one bill that was absolutely clean as far as every technical detail is concerned. I spent a lot of time on it, but the administrative assistant had some cleanup housekeeping amendments. I think they're incorporated here. All of which, nearly as I know, are amendments which passed the House committee, but which weren't in the bill. This, I think my last shot on this was in yesterday's Oregon Journal in this spot over here, Oregon City Budget OK. Voters in a 7.9% turnout Tuesday approved a budget request of $622,000 outside the 6% limitation. My own personal interest in this cause for a number of years has been to bring local district elections in the greater visibility in the hope that voter participation could be greater. We've spent a lot of time talking about local control in this session legislature, and I think it needs to have greater visibility. We hope that the ease in established precinct polling places for each of these elections, all elections on the same day for these numerous kinds of districts, and the administration of the election procedure by the county clerk will produce a better result, hopefully, in voter participation also.
Thank you, Mayor. Dr. Cherry, do you have any?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Howard Cherry, representing myself, I guess, in various capacities. The amendments dated June 14, 1973 were not at my request, but our cleanup ones, and I think the most important item there is changing Monday to Tuesday, which has been the intent of the bill all along. That's on page 19, line 32. And somehow that word didn't get changed, it just went through.
Where is that, Howard?
It's on page 19, line 32. It should be the first Tuesday in May instead of the first Monday in May.
Historically, Tuesday is important because the different people had to go. We wouldn't have to be traveling on Saturday by car.
And it's in some importance to those who are setting up the booths and so forth. They have Monday to work on instead of having the week before and set over the weekend. It's not a, and all other elections are on Tuesday.
I'd add parenthetically, it was changed to Tuesday everywhere else, and the intent was that it should.
Yeah, we have that.
That should be consistent throughout, yeah.
We've got that in our proposed
amendment. There's one other amendment that I think is of some importance that I don't know where it is in these two, but Jane wrote it, and that is that the way it is listed on the election dates, it says that this election date shall be on the second Tuesday in May, and then it says there are alternate dates that, on which levies can be extended, or can be voted, but it doesn't. The wording is such that you can't put a levy on the day of the election, and that was not the intent at all. And you can have levies, vote for levies or other money matters, and that's in here somewhere. Jane wrote that in.
Now, in your amendment.
Now, the one issue that I feel is very important is in your June 18 amendments, the last, it is dealt with in the last line, and it is wrong.
You mean policy-wise, or
no? I mean the wording. The wording is wrong. And I'll call your attention that
page 6, line 32.
Page 32, line 9.
Page
34.
Yeah.
It's page
34. Next to last page.
I'd like to call your attention to the summary on the front. As this was discussed in the interim committee, all districts, including those in Multnomah County, would have gone on to the same day. That would include district number one, the Multnomah County IED, and the Portland Community College. Now, district number one felt very strongly that they wanted to be on the primary instead of the annual one day, and they changed it for district number one, and they changed it for the intermediate education district, but they did not change it for the Portland Community College, and it's essential that those three be together. My first choice would be that they are annually, but because of the strong feelings of the Portland Board, which has justification, they want to be on the primary date. Now, Jane, in redoing this, has, in the last two lines of, on June 18 amendment here, restores a bracket of material and deletes the regular annual. And what that does, it puts all the community colleges back on the primary date, which was in the original law, in existing law, and the other community the community college other than Portland Community would like to leave it on the annual basis, but Portland Community on the primary, so it's the same as the other two large districts in Multnomah County.
Well, what do we have to do by way of amendment to do that?
Well, you have to, I think you have to leave...
Yeah, just leaving the new material in there does not do it.
It should be the way it's written here, and not deleting this other material, and then put in one exception, a community college that, as in the school board, in the district number one, community college that exists primarily in a county over 300,000 shall have it on primary.
Now, what I want to do then, to accomplish what you suggest, is that our last proposed amendment be stricken.
The last part of this...
Yes, and leave chapter, the new material, chapter 259 in there, and then put in the new language.
And put in the new language that except the community college that... Now, you've got to be careful on wording that, that you don't include Mount Hood.
Yeah.
Well, now, why the difference? Why not have them all on that schedule?
Well, if I can use the blackboard, I could show you very quickly.
Yeah, I don't... Okay. It's the problem with the...
A half a dozen people on the board. What about the rest of the people?
No, the point is they get out into Washington County, they get in the different districts. And Dr. Cherry, I think, was elected by 125 votes out of Portland or something last time.
Here's the problem. This is Multnomah County, and this is Portland Community College. Mount Hood would be out here, and something like this. These areas are zoned. Now, the zone I happen to be in is like this. There are a couple of zones that are just in Multnomah County, and the rest of them are partly in Multnomah and partly out. If you have the election for the whole community college annually, it means that for the areas outside of Multnomah County, that you're having a vote on every district. Every little school district. You're having a vote on every other district, small district of any kind, on this date. But in the Multnomah County areas, it is only a special election for the election of one director in each of one of these. And the example here, and this is personal, I could use it on some other area, but on a special election, when I was elected last time, in all the area in Portland, there were 128 votes. You got a special election for one person in one rather insignificant, relative district, while in the Scappoose-St. Helens area, there were about 3,000 votes. Because there were every grade school, every high school was voting. And this would affect each one of these in which the zone goes across the county line. I hasten to say that those elected from the other counties have been very excellent board members, but I don't think it is quite reasonable that you have it in this manner. And of course, if you do have it for, there will be an election, which is a primary election, throughout all the areas that would be an equal shot at it if this were changed.
Chairman? I gathered from your earlier remark that you really personally would favor having school district number one have its election the same time as the districts in the rest of the state rather than on the primary. Would you mind giving, I'm pleased to hear that. I'm a little bit surprised, you know, but I'm pleased to hear it. What's your reasoning?
Well, this might surprise you too. In general, I would take out everything in the law that says except for counties or cities or districts over 300,000, and then go back and those that are absolutely necessary put back in. But as generality, I think it is wrong and absurd to single out one particular area unless there's a real good reason, just because of its population. I'd go the other way too. And the education things, to exempt people under 4,500 or under 2,000 or under 200, but, as a generality, that the laws we pass should affect everybody in Oregon.
Don't you really think that, and I think this is your thinking, but it occurs to me that it would be a good thing to have all of the director elections and perhaps most of the budget elections on the same day, every place in the state, including school district number one. So this is the day that voters can be concerned about schools and other special districts and not confused with...
Senator Cook, I'd like to have the record show that you and I see exactly the same on this matter.
The,
call for remarks.
Senator Cook, we...
You better look at it carefully.
The opposite position on that has been the,
the bill has really had a chance in this committee.
Well, I simply want to point out that that was the general goal, the single member or the single local district election. It was the exemption was allowed in our committee because the because you achieved greater voter turnout, one, from the long-established primary date on which all of these took place. The second was that the cost of election, and they since they are willing to go, as other counties were not yet willing to go to the primary date, it was allowed that they could go because they saved a good deal by being on their own. Saved a deal of money by not being on the special election day.
Really isn't all that much money, though, is it? If you use the, I don't know how many precincts, you consolidate the precincts as they do in other areas, you wouldn't need to open every precinct. Is that in the bill, or do you have to have a polling place in every precinct?
Mr. Chairman, I like to, it is a considerable amount of money. Yeah. For instance, on the IED district, where it's voted in this manner, it costs $200 per person per meeting of the IED board just to be elected to that position. That's per cost per person per meeting.
Well, of course, you're not talking about very many people or very many meetings in terms of dollars in the area.
Well, I can check it out again, but I think the difference to put these three on the primary is around $50,000.
Between a special election.
Yeah,
primary.
Between conducting a special election and putting them in the primary. I'll check it out. Are there other questions?
Any other questions to witnesses?
Supposed to be on the floor.
Fine.
Of the House.
Thank you very much for coming over. We appreciate it. Senator Peter. There was no action taken on the amendments.
No.
All right. And so you're moving the amendments, proposing amendments to these
right.
Are the amendments that you have in the back of that memorandum. The ones of June 14 and June 18.
No, I'm just talking about June 18 amending that amendment.
Okay.
Now, what does that do?
Well, that's what Dr. Cherry talked about on line 33, page 32, take care of the situation described on the board. It's going to be a little bit of a complicated amendment, I assume, but it's got to be new language to do it. His amendment would leave the bill on line 33, page 32, exactly as it is, and then add some additional language to take care of the situation described on the board.
You mean to have the election of the community college?
There in Portland Community College, so that all the districts would be voting at the same time, so they wouldn't have to have a special election in about three or four places in Multnomah County where there's an insignificant number of voters involved. That's what the purpose of the motion is.
Well, why don't we consider the whole thing a work session on the bill? I'd like to see the amendments. They're going to be kind of hard to draw.
I have them drafted. There's no reason why we need to act.
I will draw my motion.
Aren't they, Steve?
Have them ready by tomorrow morning? Okay, we'll have them tomorrow morning. Now we'll go to 30.
We got 26, 25.
Well, just, I'll tell you, there's just one thing. Is Representative Wolfer here? He's here on 30.
Okay.
We proceed differently here in the House side. The representative over here, they testify.
We've already gone to work over there. So.
They've been very courteous to me.
Senator, or Representative Wolfer, you're here on House Bill 39.
39. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Martin Wolfer, Representative District 33.
Is that the bill that's out here loose somewhere?
Yes. The loose bill, they say. Okay.
In the name of all that is good and equitable, motherhood, the flag, and the pride of ownership, this Bill 3090 reaches out to the deep-seated rural philosophy of pride in the community that will be seriously damaged if not buried by the passage of this bill. I'll make it no secret that I was probably elected on the basic intent of this bill. It's also no secret that the city of Salem would like to have Kaiser. I promised to do what I could to preserve the community and community spirit of Kaiser. Kaiser is a clean area, largely highly improved property since most of its growth has taken place since World War II. Its fire department is the best equipped, most efficient in the state. The city of Salem, with all its growth problems, would profit handsomely by annexing Kaiser and help pay for their new civic center and extend their tax base and narrow the gap in competing to be the second largest city in the state. Converting this bill to terms that legislators can understand, if the House had 60 votes and the Senate 30 votes, the Senate would lose every time by simple arithmetic. That's the end of my testimony, but I think the people of Kaiser feel like baby chicks in an elephant pen.
What does this do, Martin? You're supporting the bill?
I am opposing the bill.
And if the bill does what, and you're against it, for what reason?
Because the city of Salem has an equal vote with Kaiser. I mean an unequal vote in number.
In annexation?
Yes.
And what's being proposed? That Kaiser, we throw Salem and Kaiser together in one unit to determine whether or not Kaiser should be annexed to Salem?
Yes.
Salem. You don't think that's fair?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair.
Sort of like city county consolidation.
It sounds very similar.
The memo.
Are there other questions of Representative Wolfer? Martin, thanks very much for coming on. Alright, let's see. We have 2625 up for a hearing.
It's going to be on work session.
Well,
I really want to move on it today.
George Joseph is here. He did not have an opportunity to testify when he was here before. Is George Joseph here? Oh, George.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George M. Joseph. I'm chairman of the City County Charter Commission. Now engaged in drafting a charter for submission to the voters under which there may or there may not be a merger of Portland, Multnomah County, and various other governmental units in the county. When 2625 was originally presented to the legislature, I believe there was a companion bill, 2626. I'm not quite sure how those two bills got into the form they were in, but one
permitted annexations by opting out cities into other counties, and one purported to permit annexation into other counties and the city county. In that form, those two bills came before the commission, and the commission at that time took the position that a bill which would permit an opting out city to annex into another county, not part of the city county, would receive favorable, would be supported by the majority of the commission. Subsequently, the bill came before the House Local Government and Urban Affairs Committee and underwent the changes that are now that are now reflected in the bill as it appears before you. Now, I know of no other instance in Oregon law, which is not to say it doesn't exist, I know of no other instance in Oregon law where a city is permitted to annex another city, annex into another city, without the approval of the other city.
Well, where's the language here? Is that on page 3? Oh, that subsection 2?
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, in fairness, how many city counties do we have in Oregon?
No, I was being very careful to say city. I was not commenting on city counties. There are no other city counties, but I'm saying I know of no other instance where a city is permitted to annex into another city without the permission of that city.
Did you identify the section of the bill?
Well, that's the effect. If they go to the county, then Polk County becomes a city.
And the statute,
and then
that,
the city to extend, would be a city.
That part of 199, which relates to city counties, does identify a city county as a city, and then it says it shall also have county powers.
My point, Mr. Chairman, is that because there's only one area, we're going to have a lot of new legislation that's never happened before.
And in fact, Senator, one of the difficulties is that the legislature has not yet started generally to think in those terms.
True.
Not only with respect to the bills here, but a number of bills that are before this legislature, including, for example, Senate Bill 100. Does not take into consideration the possibility of the existence of city county. Now, the present bill permits, as I believe the Constitution requires, that the existing municipal corporations, or existing cities in Multnomah County, have the power to opt out. And that's not an issue at all. Now, when the idea came up in this House committee of some way to adjust the matter, it was suggested, I believe, first by Jane Gearhart, that perhaps the way to handle the matter would be to put such a change under the jurisdiction of the local boundary review commission, and the present form of engrossed 2625 reflects that decision, essentially by taking the original form and adding to it section 2. Now, during the time that this was before the House committee, I expressed the belief that if the legislature determines that, unlike other situations in Oregon, this particular type of city, that is, one excluded from a city county, should, as a matter of policy, be entitled to annex into another type of city, to wit, a city-county, then it is preferable that the matter be handled under the local boundary commission. Since that time, and by the way, the precise language that we were talking about in the House committee before it was adopted was not actually before us when we were discussing it. We were discussing the matter in principle, and 2625, I think, fairly reflects, and there's no question about it, fairly reflecting the principle that we were talking about. Now then, the next thing that came about was that people began to say to me, what about this mechanism that is actually proposed in 2625? And very frankly and honestly with this committee, I had accepted the principle. I had not studied the precise language, and in fact did not study the precise language because I was, for the simple reason that in principle I'm still opposed, and I think the commission would remain opposed to the idea that the city-county would come into being with certain boundaries, depending upon whether there was an opting out or an opting in, so to speak, and then it would face the prospect of being nibbled away at by the excluded cities, and that would constitute a serious impediment to the overall planning and decision making that I think is at the heart of the concept of city-county consolidation. If I were to be a member of the legislature of the city-county, which is, I can guarantee you, the remotest of possibilities, I would be extremely hesitant to plan for or make improvements in or increase the level of services in the areas contiguous to and subject to annexation by those opting out cities, and until I was very, very sure that I was not going to get nibbled away at, or we were not going to get nibbled away at, by the action of the opted out cities. Now, after the hearing last week, Mayor Goldschmidt said some things that I had not thought about, and very frankly, I don't think he had thought very much about at that point. And he asked me afterwards out in the hall, he in effect said, well, have you thought about those things? And I said, no. And he said, well, you better think about them because I'm on my way to the mayor's convention. And I think they require some additional thought, and I would, with the committee's permission, read some of my thoughts here with respect to the technicalities of this bill, which I still oppose in principle. And this requires a little bit of background about the Boundary Review Commission's actions, and I hope the committee will bear with me for approximately 5 minutes on this. I think it is true that the draftsman of the Boundary Commission law never really had in mind either the possibility of one city annexing the territory of another city. I think what they had in mind is, at best, were mutual adjustments of lines between cities. And so far as I know, there are no provisions in Oregon law permitting the annexation by one city of another. Now, under the boundary review law, a minor boundary change is an annexation or withdrawal of territory to or from a city. So we're talking in this bill about so-called minor boundary changes. Under the present law, a boundary commission may initiate a boundary change, or a city may initiate a boundary change by an annexation proceeding. If the proceeding is initiated by the Boundary Commission and the Commission approves the change, it becomes effective without action by the voters or the governing body of the affected city, although Senate Bill 501 would change that.
Boundary changes can also be initiated by resolution of the governing body of the affected city, or by petition signed by 10% of the registered voters residing in the affected territory, or by petition signed by owners of one-half of the land in the affected territory. If the boundary commission is initiated other than by the commission itself, and if it is approved by the commission, it becomes effective after 45 days unless written objections are filed by voters, or unless a resolution objecting to the change is adopted by the city county council of the affected city. In the event of any sort of protest, or either sort of protest, an election must be held in the city or district, presumably meaning the one from which the objections originate. The election expense rests on the city making the annexation. Then, the territory under ORS 199.501 sub 2, which is affected by such a proceeding, it is protected in this way. The territory withdrawn shall be free from assessments and taxes levied thereafter by the affected city or district. Now, with that outline, there are two very important features of the local boundary commission law that have to be taken into consideration. One is that under present circumstances, the affected district, and that we're talking in this case the city county, can force an election. Under the present law, the affected district can force an election by action of its city council. 2625 would eliminate that and say that only the voters in the affected territory shall have the right to file written objections to or vote on the question of annexation. Second point, under present law, it is true that where there is one of these kinds of minor boundary changes, the voters of the whole district affected would vote on it. And frankly, I don't mind limiting the vote. This bill would permit only the people in the territory to vote. Third, under the present law, if territory is withdrawn, it is thereafter, quote, free from assessments and taxes levied thereafter by the affected city or district. Now, this statute provides expressly that subsection 2 of ORS 199.510 applies to the affected territory withdrawn from a city county. Therefore, under this bill as it is drafted, you have three things that are true. We seem to be reduced in dimension.
Any difference? We're all being recorded. We type up the minutes. Mr. Chairman,
I would like to have a copy of this.
I do too.
Do you have it?
Have you got copies for us, George?
This is a memorandum to Mayor Goldschmidt, and I believe that he would have no objection to my making it.
Leave it here. We'll make copies.
And I would be very pleased if you would read House Bill 3099 that's in this committee as well. That completely circumvents boundary alterations by boundary commission for hearing purposes. And I'd like to have you look at it as well, because I think we'd be just as alarmed about it.
Well, Senator Meeker, one of the difficulties I've had is that there are so many bills that potentially affect the things I'm concerned with that, frankly, I haven't been able to keep up with them. And one of the basic fears I have about this bill is that it puts it under the Local Boundary Review Commission. But in the meanwhile, so many things are going on with the local boundary, potentially going on with Boundary Review Commission law, that I cannot tell exactly what the process is. I'm not familiar with the bill you mentioned.
Mr. Chairman,
is that 3099, Senator?
3099.
I think we'll give you a copy right now.
Definitely, we can ask a few questions.
On 3099?
No. I'll stick to 2625.
I was going to say, we got a lot of witnesses out there.
bill.
On which, or is that also?
The principle that's encompassed in 2625 is one that would extend the boundaries of the city to a logical service area, which in essence I think is a good principle. Is there any way in your view that we can take care of the problems you raised in 2625 and at the same time encompass that principle?
Senator, this was precisely why Mayor Goldschmidt asked me to think these matters through, because if I recall correctly, there was a discussion between Senator John Byrne and Mayor Goldschmidt on this point, in which Senator John Byrne said, wouldn't it be fair to the opted-out cities to permit some period of time during which they could rationalize their boundaries, and also there would be an adjustment period, and it was specifically for that purpose that this memorandum was written. And I suggested in the memorandum, and it concludes by saying, turning back now to the assumption that 2625 is likely to pass, the question, which is an assumption that I made at the beginning, saying 2625 will come out in some form, what ought to be the form, then I said I should think that line 20 on page 2 of the bill might well say county, comma, but the excluded city may not extend its boundaries into the city county after the end of the 24th month following the final effective date of the city county charter. Then, on page 3 of the bill, the sentence beginning at the end of line 5 with the word action should be taken out, or at the very least rewritten to limit only the voters who would vote in an election. As it stands now, it would exclude the city county from being able to protest such an annexation or having any voice in it. While I think that it is fair and equitable that the voters affected vote, I do not think it fair and equitable that the city county has to sit there and take it without even being able to say, let's have an election on it.
You're protected somewhat in that the normal procedures under Chapter 199 are still there. You had very, in that case,
that's correct. Yes, that is correct.
Veto power in the city.
Yes, that's correct. And that was the principle we agreed upon in the House Committee, and that was the reason why this was attractive to everybody, that it went before the Boundary Commission, which could say no in the first instance.
And which they're very likely to do if the boundary goes far beyond what is left.
It was asked at the last meeting of this committee, what is the situation in East County? And I think the point that you're making, I think the situation there is appropriate to this point. About the time our commission started its activities, the Boundary Review Commission asked the five, or at least four of the five cities, to present to them their views, I guess you would say sort of master plans of annexation, although that's not the term they used. And then that process has not entirely been completed by the cities affected, but certainly I believe Gresham came up with a plan that showed a very, very large area. Gresham then began to discuss a specific part of the overall plan relating to an area that's now in Fire District 10. And I believe in that instance that the Boundary Review Commission said, you can't take over the district merely on the, or take over that area merely on the basis of fire protection. You have to show to us that you are able to provide the other municipal services, and I guess that's where that is at this time. And I agree, and I agreed in principle, that if you're going to permit them to change their boundaries at all, it ought to be under the Boundary Review Commission. But the third major change in this bill is that subsection 2 of ORS 199.510
simply cannot apply. It says that this territory shall be free from assessments and taxes levied thereafter by the affected city or district, and whatever one thinks about the question of the taxing powers or what the tax system will be for the city-county, it simply would not do to say that that, and by the way, I don't mean to suggest that the draftsman of the bill intended that breadth, but in effect what they have said, I think by accident, is that thereafter the city-county could not tax anything, could not impose a tax in that area.
Well, it would be taxed by the other city, would it not?
Yeah, but right now, you see, the territory of the city-county encompasses the whole territory of the city-county, which includes the opted-out cities.
Well, yeah. Oh,
and this would seem to create a third category of the tax-free zone. Now, there's sense in it if you're thinking about pure city to city.
But actually, the city of Gresham will be subject to a tax for tax purposes, and if this area is annexed to the city of Gresham, it'll be subject to the tax, just like the city of Gresham will be subject to the tax.
Except that that's not, Senator Cook, what ORS 199.510 now says, sub 2. Because it just never thought of this situation.
This would make the differing tax rate constitutional, wouldn't it?
No. No, it would further make it unconstitutional because you'd have some people who would have to be served by the city-county for some purposes. I have I simply would provide that subsection 2 of 199.510 shall not apply to territory withdrawn from a city-county, and such territory shall be subject to such assessment and taxation as may be provided by or under the charter of the city-county for territory in an excluded city, which is Senator Cook's point. If that objective is to be obtained.
I think that the memorandum is of extreme value to the committee.
Now, I did not bring extra copies of it. Yes, if you would. May I ask Senator Burns?
Senator.
Have the members of the committee received a memorandum dated June 18, 1973 from Mrs. George Casterline, who is a member of the commission and who wrote a 2-page memorandum to members of the committee?
Mr. George Casterline?
No, from Mrs. George, Polly Casterline.
I got that in my office, I think, yesterday, and I have not read it.
Well, I wonder if that could also be.
Where is the memorandum you're talking about?
She's getting it. George, let me ask you a question. Mayor Otto testified here, and he seemed to be more concerned about those areas that are urbanized over the Clackamas County line. Does that present a problem?
If he gave that impression, I do not believe, Senator Burns, that that is in fact presently very much of a concern. Gresham touches the Clackamas County line. Gresham's natural area of growth, if there is such a thing for a city, certainly does not stop at the Clackamas County line. And there has never been, from the commission's point of view, there's never been an objection to an annexation across the county line into non-city county territory, which they can do now. You see, the trouble comes about because 199, our part of 199 now says that an excluded city's boundaries are frozen by the creation of a city county, ignoring the fact that Gresham will be contiguous to Clackamas County.
Well, can they go into Clackamas County under this?
No, they couldn't.
Under which? Under this bill?
Well, no, I'm talking about present law.
Not under the present city county charter.
Well, there's nothing wrong with passing legislation so they annex out into Clackamas County.
None, and I said the commission voted to permit to favor a bill that
that's
said may annex.
That's not really an issue, but the real issue here, would you mind repeating to me, I was out on the phone a minute ago, would you mind repeating to me what you say the defect is here and why, do you have the exact language? I'm really concerned because why didn't you bring this up over in the House? Why hasn't it been brought up
Well,
before?
I'll tell
why
you why.
Last minute,
now, Senator Cook, I'll tell you why. Glad you asked that question.
The obstructionist tactics...
Oh, come on, Senator. Let's not have talk about obstructionist tactics from you. Please, Senator, with all due respect. The bill, the idea for 2625 in its engrossed form was presented by Mrs. Gerhart in committee discussions as a matter of principle, and we had a substantial discussion in the committee in principle. At the end of that discussion, Mrs. Gerhart was asked to prepare amendments, and the committee adopted the principle, and I think their records will show that without language before them, they adopted a principle. And I agreed with the principle. Then the bill came, and I stated to this committee precisely and directly that I read that bill and I thought it fairly reflected the principle, and I think I said that here this morning.
Well, I'm
not really
concerned about your views. Now, what do you say is the objective of this bill here? Technically.
Well, the memorandum is now being copied, and the defects are that, and we're no longer talking about the annexation principle itself. We're talking about, given the principle that subject to boundary review commission review, there ought to be a that annexations could be made, then the objections are first, the city county would be prevented from raising an objection and forcing an election on an annexation. Only the people in the territory could do that. That is different than the general provision under the Boundary Review Commission law. The second point is that it is unlimited in time. This nibbling could go on for an unlimited time. The third objection is that the application of the language of subsection 2 of ORS 199.510 would be an extreme.
Well, why should, if we're following the principle that only the people in the area have a voice in the matter, why should someone outside of the area be able to force an election within the area where they have a vote?
Senator Cook, let me ask you this.
To the people in the area.
Senator Cook, I stated also that I have no objection to limiting the vote to the people in the area.
What's wrong with limiting
Senator
the
Cook,
electors?
You tell me then.
Force the vote. Not to raise the question before the District Boundary Commission.
Senator Cook, if you will examine the present provisions of the Boundary Commission law, you will note in it who is entitled to vote in other cases where there is the withdrawal or annexation of territory, and I guess you will have to tell me why a city county is so special that it should not have the powers that a water district has with respect to losing its territory. Why should a city county be discriminated against because it's a city county in favor of something that's being created by this bill called an excluded city? Not this bill, the charter bill.
I can give you a reason. You know, this is a revolutionary kind of legislation. It brings in a totally new concept. It involves an area that is not presently in an urban area, and it's a question of whether or not these cities, where there is no city county now, we're writing the preliminary rules. There is no city there now, and it's just a question of whether or not we are going to permit the orderly growth of those cities that presently exist in this area if something else happens.
But, Senator, I would never be able to convince you, because you are adamantly opposed to city-county consolidation, I would never be able to convince you that to talk in terms of the orderly growth of those cities after the creation of city-county is the exact opposite of the principle involved in city-county consolidation. It would be just as logical, just as proper to say that Washington County and Clackamas County should be able to nibble away at the city-county and the city-county have no voice in it. Now, if you... Well, if Senator Cook's asked me a question, I'd like him to hear the answer. Senator, I would never be able to convince you on this matter that the situation is special in a way other than you think it is special. You think it is special and that these cities should be forever protected and encouraged. I think it is special, and I think the encouragement and protection of the cities is quite contrary to the idea of city-county consolidation. And that's where we are.
Are there other questions?
Well, George, where are we? Under the city-county consolidation, once we make it into the city of Portland, right?
Pardon me?
What's going to happen to a place like Gresham and Troutdale? Are they...
Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, Maywood Park, at the time of the voting on the charter, will have... The voters of those five incorporated cities will have a vote separate and apart from the votes on the other question. If there is a city-county, shall Gresham or whichever join the city-county? And if they vote no, then they are in the category of excluded cities. Now, under the present provisions of the City-County Enabling Act, if the charter is approved and when it becomes effective, then those cities can no longer change their boundaries. That was an action of the 1971 legislature. And that's the way it presently reads. With respect to Gresham, that seems a little odd, at least, in that Gresham abuts on territory that is not in and is not foreseeably within the city-county. So there is no sound reason, at least in the case of Gresham, that I can think of, for saying that Gresham cannot extend into Clackamas County. But this bill takes the form of Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, extending into the city-county. And the first question is whether that ought to be done, but given... If it is decided it ought to be done, the questions then become, how long should it be subject to being done? Mayor Otto, Representative Otto, who is a member of our commission, every time we get around to discussing a name for this, suggests we call the whole thing Greater Troutdale. Conceivably, that could happen. And what we'd have is this odd situation, just to point it up as far as I'm concerned, if this bill passed in its present form, Gresham could annex into the city-county. It could not annex Troutdale. It could not annex Wood Village. It could not annex Fairview. It could annex into the city-county. Oh, and into Clackamas County. Now, I think there's something to be said for a rationalization of the boundary lines out there, I may say independently of city-county consolidation, and the Boundary Review Commission has also said that, and that's why they asked for these plans, the exact name of which I've forgotten. I think Senator Cook has the technical name for them, which have been presented in whole or in part and are under active consideration by the Boundary Review Commission, which, by the way, I should say, Senator Meeker,
ask for those proposals and expressly stated in its request that assuming that city-county consolidation takes place in 1975 or at some time, we're concerned with getting these cities into shape, literally, for their respective service areas prior to that time because 199 freezes their boundaries at the time of city-county consolidation. And that was one of the stimuli. By the way, I may say the Boundary Review Commission at an early time asked our commission if we wanted to be a party to reviewing those or have some input into that process, and we said no. We considered that outside our ambit, unanimously.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meeker.
It's 15 after 9. We have a section at 9:30. We've got 39. Are we going to hear that this morning?
We're going to hear everything that's on the agenda. If I'm the only one sitting here, well, that's what we're going to do, and I'll stay here until every witness on every bill is heard this morning. It's going to be a hearing. I'm just going to go right straight through.
Did Marion call?
Pardon me? Yeah.
Did Marion call and tell me where we are?
I know there are a lot of people here on these bills, and there's going to be a hearing on everything that's on the agenda today. If I'm the only one here, I'll hear. Anybody else in a position to stay? You may have four duties, but you can't stay. And I know there'll be some coming and going by committee members to do that. We've done it before. It worked out all right. And, well, the other thing is, I want to point out the committee. I scheduled a meeting of this committee, which I'd hope would be the last meeting, so we can wind the thing down tomorrow. It'll be from 9:30 to noon, as I recall. And Revenue decided it wanted to have a meeting from 8 to noon tomorrow. They meet in the same room. I'm on Revenue, and having a certain constituency I represent concerns about some revenue measures I'm going to be at the meeting. So what I'd like to find out, Senator Carson, Senator Cook, and Senator Howard indicated they would be here at 5:30 tonight. Could you be here at 5:30, Senator Meeker?
Yes.
And I would hope that we can just about wind it up, but if we do not, then we'll meet from 11 to noon tomorrow if we have to finish it up. But this does not change my remarks with respect to hearing all the witnesses that are here today. Are there further questions of Mr. Joseph?
Chairman, I'd like at this time to move that House Bill 2625 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Why don't you wait for the night?
Well,
I come over with the intention of voting on this, but I do have questions. Between city-county consolidation, don't think it's ever going to pass, but...
Norm, would you vote if my motion were to send it to the floor without recommendation, would you support it? Just as a courtesy to me, I'm sure that John Burns, if he were here, would vote for the motion. So would Jernstedt. I'd like to move it out without recommendation, and then you're perfectly free to vote against it once it's on the floor.
Well, I'm going to make an amendment, and I move it this time. And that is on page 3 of the bill, line 2, delete the words. Whether it is located in the city, county, or is, and insert the words which is.
Well, then you're killing the purpose of
no, they can still annex in Clackamas County.
Oh, good deal.
Well, that's what Mayor Otto testified to that more than
that was one of the things he said that it did, but he was equally concerned with the annexation into the city, county.
So. That's the motion. The discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
No.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
I guess the motion failed.
Well, I've never voted in my life to send a bill to the floor without recommendation. And I've been here 22 years, and I think it's too late in the game to If I support some, I support it. If I don't, I don't. And I really burn it. I supported city-county consolidation from the start. I sometimes think they could be a little bit fairer with some of the things they do with East County, but I want city-county consolidation. If it happens, I oppose violently them going to someplace in Ohio to bring somebody out to consolidate the two departments in Portland that are working close together.
Mr. Chairman, to interrupt...
We didn't do that, Senator Howard.
Can we put it on the agenda at 5:30 tonight when we get the members here so we can get a vote on it?
Every bill in this book is on the agenda today, all day long, on the agenda tomorrow. With every bill in the book.
How about if I can... You're not going to have any meeting until 5:30, though.
That's right.
Unless someone comes in here this morning later. Okay, I'll withdraw my motion for now. Maybe I can get another member up here so we can vote it out.
Go out and snare some horses. Okay. The motion's withdrawn. That concludes the hearing on 2625.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McCullough.
I move that we send amended House Bill 665 before we pass.
665. Well, I didn't talk to Phil Katz yet.
Which bill is that?
Well, it's the one we mentioned yesterday.
Oh, that one.
Oh, you move it? Okay, there's been a motion to send 665 and amend the going to do pass recommendation. Burton, call the roll. No. Motion failed. All right.
Why Senator Howard leave so quickly?
Oh, he's gone. I didn't know he left.
He did not. As soon as he heard my motion, he left.
Quick as I've ever seen. Well, Norm's got some floor responsibilities preparing for him. He had a few minutes. Now we'll go to...
We have a motion to reconsider 26, too, if you want to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Are you the one that moved to reconsider?
How did?
Somebody had a touch base with Alex.
Okay, we better get down there and count noses. Wingard won't be here, and I don't know the Betty Brown one. Would you call Betty Brown's office and see if she's going to be on the floor today?
Well, just tell Alex when he makes a motion, call.
Excuse me, this is Senator Howard. Yes. And would you call Senator Howard, tell him when he gets to 826 to be sure to call the Senate on? We're up here. All right, let's see. You betcha. We'll go to 3090.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meek.
I think that the people that are here to testify on 2717 would be willing to come back this evening.
2717.
You know, we don't want to...
All right, I'm sorry, Tony. All right. Is there just one person here, or are there others? Well, I'll be guided by your wishes and the wishes of the witness.
Would we all right to come back this evening at 5:30?
That's fine.
Would that be all right with
you? Is there more than one witness? We can consolidate the other?
Two. Just one testifying.
So is that okay? 5:30 tonight? Because otherwise we'll...
That way you won't have to wait on.
Okay.
3:30.
I think we put a little bit more on the agenda for able to chew here an hour and a half. Okay, we'll go to 3090 now, and Mayor Lindsay. Where's Mayor Lindsay?
Mr. Chairman, could four of us, including Mayor Lindsay, get together here? We think we could
get more chairs and bring as many up as you want.
All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Don Jones, representing the League of Oregon Cities.
Okay, now let's wait just one second till the clerk gets back here. She's making some phone calls because I want to be sure she's got the identification of those who are speaking. Hopefully this makes some sense.
I'd like to have joining us taking here Mayor Lindsay of Salem and Bob Moore, the city manager of Salem, and Mike Leeson, the city manager of Sweet Home. And we'll try to coordinate our presentations and give you a chance to question us.
Is there anybody here on 157?
Senate Bill 157.
You feel like you're playing to a packed house. You feel like you're playing to a packed house.
Did you want us to wait till...
Just one second, Adam. Dean, could you write down the names of the witnesses and stop until Mickey gets back? Okay, all right, we got Mickey, we got Don Jones on the left, we got Mike Gleason, who's the city manager for the city of Sweet Home, and Mayor Lindsay of Salem, and Mr.
Moore, city manager.
Robert Moore.
Moore.
I couldn't remember his name, he was the city manager for Salem.
I wish, Mr. Chairman, given the, and for your tape, I'm Don Jones. I wish, given the lateness of the hour here, we could convince you this is a non-controversial little housekeeping bill and that it could go by without much discussion, but I think as we get into it, you'll find that it perhaps has a little more to it than that. It really represents a proposal for a major change in city annexation laws, and we've tried to go through and spell it out in this written statement, and I think in the interest of time, I will not go through the written statement in detail. To rather oversimplify it, it is a provision for cities to be able to annex by ordinance territory that meets certain criteria that are spelled out in the bill, and under certain conditions there could be a referendum election on the annexation ordinance if either 10% of the voters in the area or 10% of the voters in the city requested a referendum. That would not apply in every case, but in certain cases, and we can go into some of the fine points there. I think the policy question that it poses for the legislature is, who do you want to take responsibility for guiding the growth of fringe areas around cities? The point that we would make is that present annexation laws cripple cities in being able to do anything about it. They don't have any control over their boundaries. The people outside the cities, in effect, have veto power over the way boundaries are extended. And so cities simply can't perform efficiently and effectively in this responsibility in fringe areas. And this is a proposal for a new annexation procedure that would, in effect, put the legislature on record as saying we want cities to assume responsibility for planning beyond their boundaries and planning to serve the entire urban area. As I say, if you have questions or you want to spend more time on the bill, I can go through this statement. We discuss in some detail the reasons for the criteria that are spelled out in the bill. We talk a little bit about the extension of the tax differential annexation concept to this kind of a procedure. We review here the details of the referendum procedure. And then we talked at some length on page 3 here about the judicial reasonableness doctrine. Because I think there is some concern that cities might go off with this kind of authority every which way and annex all kinds of territory, and I would want you to note that the courts have already clearly said that annexations, in addition to whatever you say in the statute, must clearly be reasonable, and annexations have been invalidated because they were not reasonable, and there's some language here from one of the cases that deals with that. I think, however, that the best use of limited time might be to have you hear, first of all, from Mr. Gleason, who can give you an example of what happens under present annexation laws in a small city that's not under the jurisdiction of a boundary commission, and then to hear from Mayor Lindsay and Mr. Moore, who can talk a little bit about what happens in a larger urban area and where a boundary commission has been in effect. There are a number of other city officials here. For a while, I think we had almost a quorum of the Salem City Council in the audience. That may have slipped away. The mayor of Roseburg, who is the president of the Oregon Mayors Association, is here and hopes to be heard on it. And you could find similar case studies in almost any city in the state. We thought perhaps these two, Sweet Home and Salem, might, for purposes of giving you some understanding of why we proposed the bill, offer some of the best examples. So with that, why don't we turn it over to Mike Gleason, who's the city manager of Sweet Home.
Can I ask one question first? Do all counties have planning commissions?
I believe that at present they do. I'm not...
I anticipate your response. Counties don't do the kind of planning you're talking about around the cities. They seem to think that that's kind of the city's responsibility. It's become more urbanized. They kind of back away from it. But I don't know why this happens. And theoretically, the way our government is now structured, I think there is a planning agency for everybody, whether in a city or outside of a city. But the counties don't address themselves to that area that becomes highly urbanized right next door to the city. They just traditionally get not done unless the city does. And I don't know why.
I can't speak. Mr. Gleason says he'd be interested in responding to that question as part of his comments. That would be all right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that kind of draws into what I wanted to say, and with respect, I'd like to kind of bring that out in my testimony.
Okay,
I'll address that specific question. I imagine why a city the size of Sweet Home, Podunkville, is asked to be part of this august group is basically because I'm a testimonial to the fact that the problem is statewide, universal. At least 80% of our cities in this state are less than 10,000. And we're always consumed with the problems of the metropolitan areas, but there's a great many Sweet Homes that aren't metropolitan areas, and how do they fit into this annexation problem? The problem has technically been with us since 1906, when the state legislature got themselves out of the boundary position. State legislature up to then set the boundaries, which frankly is preferable to the circumstance we're in right now. It's getting worse, and the exemplified by the fact that you can see the urban residential sprawl all over the Mid-Willamette Valley and any place there's any density pressure at all, and the corresponding problems with agricultural land and a farm economy in terms of the raising price rents. It is not, as has been suggested by the backers of SB 100 and others, that this current land use mess is the result of either the rapers of the land or the fat cat capitalists or fractionated governments or narrow-minded, fuzzy-thinking politicians or poor utilization of federal funds or even the unwillingness to set priorities. It is because, as it's presently situated, the statutory obligations of response from different governmental agencies generates and guarantees this type of action. There's no way to get hold of the boundary problem. Development knows no boundary because there just is no boundary procedure. And that's what this bill is trying to address itself to. This is not a land grab. And it's been more than adequately documented that cities, and per se, in terms of value, are net losers in annexations. They are not net winners. And it takes years and years to undo the amount of problems that are done. Once a piece of land is designated with a use, a fixed facility on there, it's between 50 and 100 years to change that under the current laws. And so once you go ahead and let a development occur beyond any control, and it comes up as a mistake because nobody really has any jurisdiction over it, then that's going to be a mistake for 100 years.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carson, please. I don't know how I follow you on land development with an annexation bill.
Okay.
To tie that together, how by allowing Sweet Home to annex the area, you're going to stop the development?
What I'm Right now, what we have is circumstances where people can develop homes, residences, and what have you, and the dam will leak in the state. They can sink a septic tank, they can sink a well, and they put their house out as long as they have a certain square footage requirement. Of course, state health laws say that you must have certain percolation and certain requirements to get a septic tank. This is a map of this area right here, all of which this is outside the city limits. Around the perimeter of the city limits is basically like that. There's 4,000 residents inside, 3,000 residents outside. The densities outside, in many cases, are higher than the densities inside. There is no public facility system whatsoever. It has already been declared a health hazard by the public health department. Septic tanks are still allowed. This is a soil conservation map coded as to septic tank acceptability. The red is those that are totally unacceptable soil for septic tank percolation. Now, this is not done by the city of Sweet Home. This was not done by a group that had an axe to grind. This was done by the Agricultural Department, Soils Conservation. The point is, the percolation test and the hydraulic flooding, which are the only two primary criteria for septic tanks, is a sham. It doesn't have anything to do with the problem. Total load, available free oxygen, the amount of bacteria in the ground, the type of loading, and probably 100 other variables are a hell of a lot more important, but much more difficult to analyze than percolability. Now, because of that circumstance, counties, and we, the county agrees that this is an unacceptable circumstance. But the county says, well, hell, we can't do anything about it. The statutes say we must let septic tanks go on. And so they go ahead and try and do their comprehensive planning, but they don't have the statutory ability to go through all of the, except through a special district arrangement, provide the public services that need to be provided in this case. A case study in point. The city of Sweet Home was annexed and incorporated in 1893. There's a lot of people down here that decided, you know, we're having problems even then with water service and stuff like that. So they formed themselves a city to provide the basic urban services for living in dense quarters. Not because they wanted to tax themselves, but because they knew that their water supply, excuse me for interrupting. You just said that there's a
part of the bank function that are no temptation. Are there still a lot of septic tanks out there? Now, today,
yeah.
I mean, I can go out and get a permit to put a septic tank in that
water. Can I have your attention a second?
Yeah. That's correct.
They need two senators on the floor for a quorum.
I'll pick up some other things.
Huh?
No other committees are meeting. They're all.
Well, where are the caucuses? Well, where they are.
John Burns and Cook are on the floor. Jernstedt's just get a quorum and come back. Wally, if you want to go ahead and proceed, and we contributed one senator. Let's go ahead.
Yeah.
In fact, we contributed three.
Okay.
So we're going to go to any meeting. That's kind of.
I'm not told to come back.
Sweet Home, anyway, they incorporated themselves, and the boundary really hasn't changed much. In 1906, like it was established by the legislature. From that, there's been annexations. The laws now require consent. You told me consent. Well, in almost every circumstance, you know, and if I was outside the city limits, I'd be in the same circumstance. It's stupid to consent. You pay taxes when you can get the benefits essentially free. Why, you know, why bother? You can go into the city, use the streets and street lights and parks and police and whatever the hell you use in the city, and then you can come out here and live as a pretty much a free rider. That's rational. And I really can't deny them that that's rational. It just happens to make the city unoperable, particularly to get larger, and thus the city's tax base becomes almost non-usable. And then it allows this urban fringe growth, which nobody really has much control over or much ability to handle.
Let's move to that. Now, if we pass this, you'll annex. What's your goal? If we pass this, how are you going to solve the problem with this thing?
Well, this piece of legislation would mean if you come up with a certain density. And that's the whole criteria.
Well, look to me, if you have one supplier of water, one sewer, and one subdivision, you can take a territory that could be granted a non-questionable reason. But reasonable is a very naturally fuzzy word. You can annex your whole area. You're leading up to that. The way to solve this problem is put it all in the city jurisdiction, and then you can control it.
That's where I'm going. And well, it may be an unacceptable, you know, that's a philosophical problem. Everybody says, you know, I moved out here because I don't want to be in the city.
Well, where do you stop?
Well, you stop at the point. No, the argument covers the
the argument covers the point at which the urban density stops.
Well, this is, but then,
in other words, what we're talking about is the boundary problem, not the annexation problem.
Okay, but because of all the reasons you say that I don't love the city because I can get an Arctic preload, I will get outside your line. Now you don't allow me to do that?
Well, we initially addressed that in this legislation, which was compromised somewhat. And I would not stand before you and suggest that this legislation solves all of the problems. What it will do is it will, right now as planners, we're map builders. We follow around and draw up what's being done. And that's not planning, that's map building. And frankly, that's the planning process. This thing, at least, which, you know, if they're going to develop, you know that you can include it in your map in a way that also gets included in your capital improvements plan. It's going to be an X if it becomes urban or urbane and requires urban services, which is the only real logical definition for a city in the first place.
Let me ask a question. Under this, the land that you would annex is not required that it be contiguous to the city boundary.
This, yes, yes, it has to be. It has to be contiguous. Can't be non-contiguous anything. What this legislation is, its scope is trying to do, is to include those areas that are already urban density and have to have urban services, and providing the agency that would give that urban service. Now, state rep statute is constituted. The only people who can provide urban services, really, the comprehensive package is a multi-service district, commonly referred to as city. I wish we could change the name, solve a hell of a lot of problems. I also, if you want to change, the legislature wants to address that problem and take it away from the city to make it something else, that's a whole different question. But at this point, nobody's in a statutory position to solve all of the problems. Now, of course, everybody says, well, geez, just send your sewer lines and water lines out there and the help has gone. Well, as soon as you put your sewer lines out there, your water lines out there, that stimulates growth. As soon as you stimulate growth, then who takes care of the streets? Who takes care of the streetlights, the parks, the police, and so on and so forth? All it does is extenuate your problems in here. Also, your ability to build sewer plants and water plants is based on the bonding capacity. And there's no way to get around that problem because that's the obligation of the guys who lend you the money. And if these people are outside your boundaries, you cannot obligate them to a bond. Therefore, if I were to allow my water system to go outside the city limits and serve all of this area, our city would be faced with a new water treatment plant within 3 years. But all of these people in here would get paid for it, and those people would get off without paying for it. I can't sell bonds that way, and so it would just be suicidal to do it. So there currently is no way to get at that problem. And I'll admit, one of the defects in this piece of legislation right here is that once we set up boundaries that matches whatever problem we have, then some kingpin will come along here and he'll develop this tract out here. I can't help that. There's nothing I can do to address that legislation. That's a compromise that occurred at the House. Too late today to do that. But what logic would it be to say, well, because of that defect, we've got to go ahead and let that guy do it anyway? Now, each county has their own way to deal with this problem. But every city, minor or major in the state, as densities equal to or greater outside the perimeter of the city limits. And everybody would like to have 1 acre with their horse and, you know, be out there in the rural world, but you can't have it both ways unless you want to, you know, completely sprawl the whole valley. And what we're talking about is that, you know, legislature, please set some criteria by which you want the boundaries to be isolated instead of just saying, well, those who want to pay, pay, and those who don't want to pay, don't.
Senator Carson. I hear your argument very persuasively on the question of providing services, but I can't tie up the argument that this is going to do one single thing to sprawl. I understand the services argument, I'm very well stated, but I really don't see how your argument holds together with this bill. You're going to have a slight effect on sprawl.
Well, this piece of legislation right here will provide that if you, in fact, through whatever statutory loopholes there are, and that's what I consider this to be, that if you, in fact, do subdivide in some kind of density that meets this criteria, or if you feel you have to have city services to get it, then you will
be in a position, you will know when you start the ballgame that it's going to be in. And you won't get into this predicament where I'm in right now in Foster, where I have 1,000 residents. They're mad at the top because the state health department says you're in a terribly unhealthy circumstance and it's going to be solved at everybody's expense, which incidentally is a 4-year process this year at this time. At least they'll know, as will the residents in every other city in the state, that if you are going to be urban, then you are going to get urban services. If you are not, you are not. Now, to address that a little more specifically, this county is not in a boundary review commission. Other counties, most other major metropolitans are, and this one may be. At that point, that would mean that the boundary review commission would get a chance to take a whack at that, which would make it much more rational, if you will. It has two effects. When there's a boundary review commission, this legislation kind of has a, you know, compounding effect. You're getting real meat to the boundary review, where without it, it's a different effect. But it's still preferable the way we're going here. Now, I would much prefer, frankly, that, and I don't care who does it, if you set up a special committee, the governor, the boundary review commission, the state liquor commission, I don't care. Somebody, please take a look at the rationality of this and tell me what the urban growth perimeters are. And then say, okay, if you want to be urban, you live there. If not, you want to be agri, you want to be a true agricultural relationship, get out and be one. But, you know, don't be in between. There's no way that I can go ahead and plan. And, of course, the argument is that cities do bad planning, and, you know, that's why we get Highway 99 and River Road and Canyon Boulevard and that kind of thing. Well, Podunk City of Sweet Home developed this database to do this comprehensive plan, which included traffic studies and drainage studies, and it's a 3-year effort, and I would submit as professional as any documentation in any planning process there is. And by virtue of the fact that you can't ignore the process outside your city limits, we planned for the whole valley as best we could through committees that were inside and outside the city limits and all that. And it's so much, outside the city limits, it's so much hocus pocus. I mean, you know, there's no way in the world that we have any way of implementing or any way of controlling or designing or even assisting this problem whatsoever. So SB 100 and any other piece of legislation, unless it addresses the boundary question, really doesn't get it.
Are there further questions? Mayor Lindsay, do you want to comment?
Chairman, Senator, in the interest of time, if you like, I would read this statement, or I can summarize it, or we can go into specifics, and whatever is your pleasure.
Why don't you summarize it, Mayor, and then that'll raise any questions.
All right. Jones has kind of skimmed over the top of the philosophical questions and the concepts that are embodied in here, and I think Mike has tried to bring you some specifics that happen in a small community. And I think in essence what we're saying is that, if you want to live within an urban environment, will someone please stand up and describe where those things should be and under what circumstances shall they exist? And if you want to be in an agrarian environment or some other environment somewhere in between, let's as legislative policy set those guidelines. As cities, the main provider of urban services, transportation, sewer, water, police, fire protection, recreation, etc., we're the provider in most instances. The structure and form of county government in this state doesn't allow that to happen very easily. It has to be in the form of special districts, single purpose districts, usually incomplete statements, and it's leaving us in a vacuum. In our own area, we spend a great deal of time discussing our urban environment and where it should be. And we are at the point right now of where we have described our urban areas of interest in the form of a boundary. We will then proceed down the line and I think describe the land use questions that will go on both sides of that boundary, those within the urban environment and those outside the urban environment. Very, very essential to make the thing work. In response to Senator Carson's question, is is this a solution? No, this is one half of the question. The other side of the
Mayor,
coin...
excuse me for interrupting. We've got a call on the Senate. We have patience and
we'll
get back to them.
Sure.
The closing days of the session made it difficult for the committee, everybody.
So we just sit tight for a little bit?
Pardon me?
So we just sit tight for a little
sure.
bit?
Sure. Maybe we can have somebody find a pot of coffee.
We just come out of the walls here a little bit.
I'm here. Uh-huh.
All right.
Where's Mike Leeson? Mike?
Who are we talking about? Ah, see, I've got Mike. Fine, I'll be that's all right.
Paper. Can you get started again, John?
Sure.
Yeah. Identify yourself.
Oh, I
feel like person.
You want to go ahead?
You're ready, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Lindsay, Mayor of the City of Salem, and we're here testifying on behalf of the cities. Gone partway through Senator Cook's statement. We chose not to read it. And I believe, if I remember correctly, where Senator Carson had indicated to Mike Gleason, City Manager of Sweetholm, that the question of if you think 3090 will solve your problems, well, really. And my response was that it's simply half of the question. What we're trying to say is that those things that are urban, let's identify them as urban and let them develop as urban areas and give some legislative direction and policy. The other side of the question that will make the thing work is to put counties in their proper form, proper structure, doing the proper things. Again, that's a legislative policy that has to be set by the state of Oregon. In our own area, we have delineated an urban growth boundary which identifies our areas of interest and our capacity to deliver services, urban services, to those areas. The other question under House Bill 3090 is the question of taking away local control. And we have attached here a statement of an editorial from the Oregon Statesman which reads in part, to allow the fringe residents around Salem and other growing Oregon cities to unilaterally determine the growth and development of an urban area is to deprive the majority of a voice in their urban area's future. And I think Mr. Don Jones spoke to that in the philosophical area to some degree. Now, if we may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like now at this point to turn to the city manager, Mr. Moore, and have him delineate for you some specific situations that have happened within our urban environment to try and bring home the questions and the points and the difficulties of the present annexation law. So, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators. There are four specific areas of annexation that I'd like to call your attention to, and I think they're illustrative of the hoops that we have to go through under present annexation laws, and I contend that those hoops serve neither the interests of the people in the areas being annexed and certainly not the interests of the total community. The first of those four annexation areas is the so-called College Heights area, indicated in brown on the map, perhaps a very fitting color because this was brought into the city over a two-year period under the existing provisions of state law governing health hazard annexations. And even though there were well-documented cases of septic tank failures, A considerable portion of the area was served by an inadequate private water system that used to shut off occasionally without notice. It took some a little over 2 years from start to finish to bring this area into the city. It was just annexed this spring. The city has already let contracts for both the sewer and water lines to be extended into that area, and we do have, in that instance, the capability to serve, and had it 2 years ago, had we been able to annex it then. The second area, and that area contained 127 acres and 386 residents. The residents at the top of the hill were not interested in annexation. The area at the bottom of the hill was the one suffering from the problem. The second one, Salem Town, a planned unit development, I'd use that term advisedly, came to the city in 1968, and we indicated to the developer that we could meet his timetable for development. For his own good reasons, I'm sure he chose not to annex to the city at that time, went ahead and secured from the Department of Environmental Quality, then the State Sanitary Authority, a temporary sewage package treatment plant with a stipulation that that treatment plant would go out of existence and the area would connect to the municipal sewer system when that was available. That was available at the time, and after 3 years, some requirements by DEQ that essentially they did put an absolute ban on building permits in the area. The discharge permit from the treatment plant overloaded its stream. We finally brought about annexation through a series of moves which involved consent annexation by the land developer for the land that he still owned, and then an enclave annexation of the balance of the territory. And at that time, the residents in the area were so threatened by seeing their retirement dream home literally depreciating in value and their area being destroyed, I think were quite happy to come into the city. And again, another situation which could have been avoided from the very beginning. The third area in East Salem, and that's the area circled in red on the maps which we've distributed here, indicated that an area of about 2 square miles today containing perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 residents, which since 1965 was the subject of 54 separate annexations, most of them consent annexation, and 2 and 3 and 10 lots at a time. And again, in response to failing private wells and septic tanks, and certainly didn't represent a logical way to bring into full urban services an area which was essentially largely already urban populated. And the entire brown area, northeast there, and the map is essentially an area that has the same characteristics. And under the present laws, it will probably take about 108 annexations over another 10-year period to bring about the same kinds of solutions that could and should be applied today to that entire area. The fourth and last area, for an example, is the one which you may have read about recently, and that's the Vickery subdivision, which is under annexation by the Marion Polk Local Government Boundary Commission. It contains some 87 acres, planned unit development with 328 lots, a density of about 4 per acre, containing eventually an area, a population of about 1,000 people. By any reasonable or logical standards, is an urban area which certainly needs more than the private water system which now seems destined to serve it, even though it's immediately adjacent to the city of Salem and a municipal water supply system. It does happen to lie within one of the sewer districts, but certainly that kind of area, larger than many, many cities in the state of Oregon, should be part of a total urban area and serve fully with all the urban services to that kind of population. And through a series of almost bizarre incidents under present annexation laws, the area now seems questionable as to whether it can legally become part of the city. I think these four examples are really just illustrative of the fact that the present laws do not enable the city or the urban center to really respond adequately to the needs of its developing fringe areas. And the city has the capability financially, administratively,
through services to adequately serve these areas and to head off a lot of the problems that develop after these areas are developed outside of the city. And many times it's a case of responding to crises after these areas have been developed.
Well, I want to finish the hearing this evening,
Mr. Chairman. Well, I'll be guided by your wishes.
Whatever they want to do. Let's come back.
You want to come back at 5:30?
Well, I'll tell you, this story, is, I think, takes some time
to tell
so that we can go through it. There's so many ramifications
well,
to it.
We'd
be glad to come back this evening.
I'm concerned. I'll say to 5:30.
Can we start over again?
I think that's a fair question.
What's that?
Well, the question was, should we start over again? I think there's some sense of that because I'm not uninitiated in their arguments. I've heard them. I don't know that it's your first experience, but the balance with me, it's missed all this.
Yeah,
maybe it would.
Maybe what you could do is give a brief recap tonight of what you've already said, and then go on the way on a suggestion.
I think we'd feel more comfortable,
Senator. I'm awfully sorry.
All right. We understand your thoughts.
It takes a considerable length of time to develop the story adequately.